Graham Matthew. So I'm watching a little bit of AEW last night, Dynamite, new setup, new color, new logo. And then my Twitter feed starts to go crazy from certain AEW fans out there.
They must have bookmarked that shit, dude. That was like a month and a half ago. What are they doing?
Listen, that tweet was maybe two. That had to be about Survivor Series, November.
No, I think you tweeted that out in like January. I mean, you can check, but it was after Okada was rumored to come to the company, which obviously he's not. Okay. But yeah, it was around there. It was before the Rumble, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm going to check this exact date because this has been on my January
23rd. Okay.
So yeah. Those who haven't seen it, it was just a regular tweet saying Punk came back, Orton, The Rock, Jay Cargo left, and Raw's going to Netflix. And I put Okada might be WWE bound. And I guess a lot of AEW fans bookmarked it, saved it because they were like, they wanted that haha moment, we got you. And in the beginning, it was a little weird because now when Punk got hurt, now it's like, oh, look, you know, he got hurt. Like, I hope you're not happy he got hurt. Mm-hmm. And now The Rock is part of the biggest storyline in the company. Orton did come back. We're going to see what they do with him for WrestleMania. Jay did debut at the Royal Rumble. A great debut, by the way. Raw still going to Netflix in 2025. And Okada did end up in AEW Dynamite last night. So, you know, congrats to you guys, you know. But the thing is, it's always about, all right, this person is there. They've had a lot of debuts, and this guy showed up, this girl showed up. You know, Mercedes is about to be AEW bound in the next week or so in Boston. But it's like, all right, what do you do with the Okadas? Like, that's the million-dollar question. So now when you see Okada debut, AEW, how was it? And then, like, what do you think they do with him? I think he's a heel now, right?
He's a heel. Yeah, he joined the Elite, yeah.
Okay, pretty much. So, like, now what do you do with him? And what was your overall thoughts of how they debuted him?
I don't think it was – I mean, there was some doubt early on as far as where he was going. I think AEW was always the likely landing spot. But you mm-hmm. can't rule out the option of him going to WWE just with how hot the company is right now and the product is and stuff like that. It would have been a bigger risk. I still feel that he went to AEW for three reasons. One, the money for the AEW probably offered him more. WWE can offer you a lot, but Tony Khan was fucking desperate to get this guy, and understandably so. So the money is one thing, but honestly, it comes down to two bigger reasons. One, he's familiar with the company, the people that work there. He's friends with the Bucks legitimately, so that makes sense. And I don't know how much English he speaks and whatever, so that might have played a factor as far as going to a company where he knows the people, he knows where he's going to be respected. I mean, Nakamura went to WWE, and that was a bigger risk, but everyone's different. AJ, I mean, I think we've talked about this before. I want to see people take bigger risks, but at the end of the day, I'm not these people. So that comes down to the one reason that I was going to mention. He gets to stay in Japan. Nakamura moved to the States. He had no issue doing so. I don't know if Nakamura is married or has kids. I don't think so. Okada, I don't know if he has kids. He's definitely married, and I don't know if he wants to leave. He definitely does not want to leave Japan. So in going to AEW, he can work less dates, probably for more money, and be with his friends, but also not have to move. And that was a big thing for Will Ospreay, too. Will Ospreay, one of the best wrestlers in the entire world. The guy doesn't have to leave his home that he just moved into or renovated or whatever. So I totally get it. It would have been cool to see these guys in WWE take a real risk. And I mean, but who am I to say that? I mean, this is their livelihood, so I understand that. At the same time, that going to your question as far as my thoughts on his debut, I wasn't overly impressed. He got a great reaction when he came out. I'm probably in the minority on this of AEW regular watchers, fans. I love both companies a lot, right. And I love Okada, but he comes in, gets a big reaction, and immediately turns heel. Now, other people might be in favor of that. I know other people are in favor of that. I got a lot more praise than I thought it would on Twitter last night when I was watching Dynamite Live, and I don't typically watch the show live, but I had heard that Okada might show up, so I watched. I didn't love the fact that he turned heel, not specifically the heel turn, but the fact that he joined the Elite. And I know it makes sense because they have a lot of history. The Elite at this point does fucking nothing for me. I'm sorry. And I know that they're going to build to a tag team match with like probably Okada and the Bucks versus like Paige and Omega. it's more elite drama and nonsense. I just don't care. They've been doing this on and off now for 5 years in this company. Mm-hmm. The only a couple saving graces here. One is that Okada has a mouthpiece in the box. So there's that. Two, he has direction off the bat. And three, I guess as well, is the inevitable rematch with Omega that we're definitely going to get at some point. And that's amazing. But going back to your question, what do you do from here and what do you do from there? I mean, he has feuds off the bat with Eddie Kingston, Omega. That's great. But we've already seen Okada and Omega. I'm great for them to run it back on U.S. soil. That's amazing. But from there, how are we handling this guy? Will he feel like an attraction that he is? Currently, honestly, in joining the Bucks, he doesn't. It's been 1 week, though. He didn't feel like an attraction after he joined the fucking Bucks last night. That was my issue with the debut.
And listen, that's always been my point, where they do a great debut. You know, we've seen a ton of debuts. We've seen Okada. We've seen Andrade. We've seen Keith Lee. We've seen Edge. We've seen a whole bunch of people. But then after a while, after 2 or 3 months, it's like, all right, what are they doing? Like, now I'm thinking, I'm going to get to Okada in a second, but like now when they debut Sasha, Mercedes, I'm like, I'm a little worried about, all right, we get the big bang, the debut, Boston, crowd goes crazy. Now, do you automatically put her in a title contender picture? How long does she become champion? How long will she be champion for? I'm about the story. I'm about how you're gonna make me emotionally invested into these guys. And I think obviously there's sports entertainment on this side, and there's actual wrestling on this side. But it's like you can't keep bringing these people in and like get a nice rating or social media hits. Then it's like, all right, within a month or so, they're nowhere to be found. They're born. Like, I'm like, even Brian Danielson, I'm like, what are you doing with him? He's never been champion since he's been in the company. Like, mm-hmm. He's been there, what, 3 years now? You know, like, Christian Cage is champion. Like, that's cool. But, you know, that's always been my fear. I don't care who goes where. I'm a fan regardless. But it's like, what's going to make me watch Okada there? What's going to make me not watch Sasha and seeing her, what she's going to do? So that's always been the question for me when it comes to AEW.
No, I understand that. Mercedes, I honestly have more faith for, just because it seems like she's going to come in right away and be a big attraction. If they're building this entire show around her next week, as I think a lot of us assume they are, that gives mm-hmm. me faith. In addition to the fact they just brought in someone that she was familiar with on the creative side from WWE that she was close with, and this writer, a female writer that is, that has mm-hmm. accolades from other, you know, sports, aspects of entertainment, whatever, coming in to write for AEW, another female voice behind the scenes that's familiar with Sasha, that they probably brought in for Sasha, to be fair, to write other people's stuff too, but primarily her stuff. That gives me confidence. With Okada, they just put him in a group I don't really care about at this point. I mean, the Bucks, yeah. I'm not denying the Bucks' talent. I thought they did a great job in that Sting debut match or retirement match on Sunday that we'll get to. I thought they did a great job. Their current shtick, I really don't care about. And putting Okada, here's my problem. Putting Okada with them does more to hamper him than it does to help them. That's my point. For other people, it might be the other way around. They might feel differently, and that's okay. Maybe long term, I'd love to be proven wrong, and this works out to be great. And I haven't seen a lot of his heel work in New Japan. I'm not saying he's a bad heel. It's more primarily mm-hmm. the alliance with the Bucks that really bothers me. I'm like, just right off the bat, he's just another guy in a group, and it's not a lot of people in the group. It's not like the Elite of 5 years ago where he had Gallows and Anderson and all these other bums in there. It's not like that. But still, I'm not overly impressed. So with Mercedes, I think she'll do fine, but you are right, though. People are well within their justification to be skeptical that they're going to follow up on this Okada debut properly. Mercedes, same thing. We'll see what happens with her next week, whether she immediately goes after the championship, which I would probably advise against. That might be a little too much too soon. But do a non-titled, you know, feud first or something, and kind of give the other women in the division the spotlight. But I guess we'll find out in due time.
And what the Bucks, they fired Hangman and Okada. So I'm sorry, Omega. So like, okay, so now you're just telling me you're foreshadowing a tag match between the Bucks or Okada against Hangman and Omega. Then eventually you get Okada and Omega down the road. So my thing is, it's like, do you feel like they had to use the Bucks to give the rub to Okada, because if Okada would have debuted by himself, came out there to an AEW crowd or even a WWE crowd, it's like, would you have gotten the pop him stand alone as opposed to him with the Bucks? So like, they needed the Bucks to go align with him right away.
Yeah, so he does not need the Bucks at all. He does not need the Bucks rub. I'm not sure how much of a rub the Bucks have to give at this point, as weird as that sounds. I don't really think that there's much of a rub there for him to get from them. I mean, the AEW audience, majority of them either have watched Okada or are at least familiar with him from the appearances that he's made in the company and have heard of him, whatever, know how great he is and whatever. At least they got it right with Ospreay. Ospreay came in. He's still technically part of the Don Callis family, but they're booking him as a babyface. Came in on his own. I mean, not yet, but they're getting to that, I would assume. Gets a great reaction, and right off the bat, winning matches, great matches, whatever. I guess you can't do the exact same thing with Okada, because he would also be a babyface. He would also kind of be on his own, and they're kind of just on the same path, or those two. So I understand not doing the same thing with both guys off the bat. You want to turn one heel. That's not even my problem. It's the fact that they're putting him with the Bucks. I just don't really, I understand why it makes sense. I'm not saying it doesn't from an on-air standpoint, or even from the standpoint of he doesn't speak a lot of English. They can speak for him. It gives us direction. Cool. But like the tag team match that you mentioned, dude, we've seen it before. I'm done. The Elite have been on the same side in AEW. They've been around long enough since the start of this company to be on the same side, to then break up, feud, reunite, and now break up and feud again. It's like, what are we fucking doing here, man? I personally do not care. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I really just don't care about it, and I would rather see Okada do his own thing. And Adam Page was doing the heel thing up until recently, up until Revolution. Why would you? Yeah. I mean, I would hope he doesn't come back as a babyface and ruin the character work that he was doing and kind of do that thing with Swerve and the world title. So I don't know. I'm just not a fan of what they were doing last night with Okada, but maybe I'll be proven wrong in due time.
Well, listen, AEW fans, congrats. You got Okada on your roster. Let's see what they do with him. So don't tag me anymore. Don't show me my old tweet from January 23rd. It was funny then. It's still funny now. Punk is hurt. Orton's going to be Orton. The Rock is, listen, you're watching The Rock every Friday night on SmackDown. Let's not lie. Jay will be a star. I hope she will be at WrestleMania. And, you know, you'll be watching Raw on Netflix in 2025. So don't tag me anymore. I did see Revolution only the last match. I did not see prior to that. It was Sting, final match, tag match, him and Darby Allin against the Bucks. And, you know, it happened. Listen, as long as Sting is happy with how it ended up, and you know, the glass stuff and this and that, having Flair involved, Ricky Steamboat involved, him winning, still tag team champions. Obviously, you know, the underwritten rule is you want to repay the favor. You want to go out and let somebody beat you on your final match. And apparently, Sting is still tag champions. We'll see what they do with the tag champions. But the only thing I would say is this. I don't know if you felt the same way. It would have been extra, like, ooh, if, like, Sting is talking, saying whatever, goodbye to the crowd, thank you, Greensboro, da-da-da. Like, I was waiting for Darby Allin to, like, turn on Sting. To be like, oh, shit, like, that's... But it didn't happen. They went off the air. Sting was still talking. But before we get to that, what did you make of Sting's final match and how everything was laid out?
I thought it was great. I think when people say that that it was one of the best wrestling retirement matches of all time, I can honestly agree with that. I don't know if it's the best, but I think it's up there. And not just the match itself, because the match itself, honestly, I don't know if acquired taste is the best way to put it, but I totally understand. My buddy RJ fucking hates all the kickouts and the no selling, and I totally agree. And it bothers me a lot of the time too. For this one occasion, it didn't. Like 64-year-old Sting kicking out of like a million super kicks and the Bucks finisher like five times. Let's face it, it's pretty fucking dumb. It's pretty stupid. But I think overall the presentation of it was great. that Darby Allin spot was indeed very unnecessary, but it was a great spectacle for the occasion.
That was crazy.
Dude, it was fucking wild. It's something that people will definitely, I mean, we're talking about it, and people that are not wrestling fans will see it and talk about it for right or wrong reasons, whatever. Was it dumb? Dude, the guy's very dumb. But it was a moment for Sting's last match, and I give him credit for that. And it was cool. It was definitely cool. As long as it doesn't die, I guess. But yeah, that was cool. And the entrances were awesome. Getting the kind of the WCW flavor in there with Surfer Sting and Wolfpack Sting and whatever, with his sons dressed up as those versions of him, was fucking cool.
That was nice.
And, you know, like you said, I was really happy that Sting won. I don't think the Bucks needed it. They'll probably win the belts anyway. And it wasn't even a case of them needing it. It's just more a case of, like you said, it's very commonplace for the retiring or departing wrestler to put over the current talent on their way out. I'm glad they made the exception here. The guy's been undefeated the entire time. No one ever goes undefeated in any run they have in any wrestling company. And Sting did, like 26-0 or whatever. Guy didn't lose a single match. Like, what a fucking legend. He didn't need to. And I feel like he elevated people by not losing. Honestly, they made him feel like an attraction. They maintained that aura. I actually liked the WWE run, but I hated the fact that he lost to Triple H. Still makes no sense. I know you agree. 10 years later, it's still very dumb.
Yeah.
It's amazing that he lost both pay-per-view matches he had in WWE, but he won every single match he had in AEW. Like, what a contrast. But no, they booked him great. He went out on a shield, went out on top here, and it was a really fun match, and I thought he did a great job. It went as well as I think it possibly could have been.
Before I get to that match, Sting should not have lost at WrestleMania 31. I guess
Triple H. I could do a whole hour show.
I think everybody on planet Earth agrees, and it's like, like, it's weird because Hunter always was in this, always gets a spot where somebody comes in, returns, whatever, and he wins. Like when Brock came back and they fought at 29, Hunter went over.
Yeah,
and then Sting debuts. He gets him at 31.
Punk, too.
Hunter goes over.
Don't remember. Don't forget when Punk was hot in 2011. He was super white hot, and then he lost to Triple H for literally no reason at all.
And then, like, because I put up a TikTok video probably last year about it, and people kept saying it was great. It was dope. You see DX. You see NWO.
I enjoyed the match. I didn't mind the match.
Some say, why would the NWO help Sting? I'm like, well, if you really peel the layers back, obviously, DX is going to help Hunter, but Sting was also part of the Wolfpack, so Kevin Nash is like torn in between, and that was like their greatest rival in that company. So it's like, hey, listen, who else was going to help Sting? If DX is out there helping Triple H, who else is going to help Sting? It's only Hall, Nash, and Hogan. So it's like, I don't mind it. It's storyline. It's entertainment. But there's no reason why Triple H went over. I'm still, that's like what, almost 10 years ago?
Yeah.
And Sting was doing really good in shape. He fought for the world title against Seth and he got hurt. But it's like, he could have been a champion maybe one time over there. But yeah, I guess they, as long as you have the pen and you can, you know, revision his history, you come into our company now, we beat you, we bought you out. You're not going to go over any of us, but it's kind of weird.
No, listen, I think there's a Mount Rushmore of dumb booking decisions in that company, and I think that one's got to be on there. I mean, it didn't do harm to, like, I think the Cody Roman one is on there, and I know you disagree, but from last year, and that's, we've talked about that every week. This was not as bad because it doesn't really have to do with, like, it's just why, like, literally why. The Roman one, you've argued why, and I've heard other people argue, but there's no reason to argue this one at all. There's literally no reason as to why Triple H should have won that match. I've heard the rumors, oh, he was supposed to face The Rock the following year, and they set up that match on that same Mania later in the show, and they wanted Triple H to win.
Ronda.
Yeah, with Ronda, the tag team match with Rock and whatever. Cool. And they wanted to build up Triple H before then. He couldn't have won a match at SummerSlam before he faced. Like, give me a fucking break. And honestly, not even that. Not only should Sting have won that match because Triple H did not benefit at all. It was dumb. The crowd was deflated. Made no sense. And the whole WWE won the war thing was crap. Not even any of that stuff withstanding. The bigger picture here is that Sting should have faced Undertaker on that show. We never got the match. We never got Taker and Sting. I know we got Taker and Wyatt. It was fine. And it was a good spot for Wyatt. Wyatt lost, so it's not even like he really benefited at all from that. They had one opportunity, and they fucking blew it. Maybe they thought Sting would be around for a lot longer. I don't know, but they should have done it for Sting's first match. Sting could have lost there, and I would not have given a shit. But he had no reason to lose to Triple H. That made no sense then. It makes no sense now. It will never make sense.
So I was going to ask you if you can go back, and if somehow you get, again, 2015 Taker and 2015 Sting at WrestleMania. I mean, does Taker go over? Like, does Sting win? Like, I know Taker, the record was broken the year prior against Brock, so that's out. You know, Taker gets Bray Wyatt and Hunter gets Sting, but if you get Sting and Taker in that spot, who goes over?
I think the idea of both guys retiring anyway, which was floated around at the time as a fan speculation idea, I always love that idea. And you don't even have to say that going into the match. I don't think Taker should have lost at Mania ever anyway. I think he should have retired at Mania undefeated, like Sting in AEW, obviously. But if he was going to lose, having him lose just once, that only one person can claim to have beat him at Mania, makes sense than two people beating him. A second person did beat him in Roman Reigns 3 years later, and I still think, I mean, Taker looked so bad in that match, you could not even justify him beating Roman on that show. But I hate the fact that Taker's record has two losses. Like, one would make sense, and it's two.
Yeah.
I think it would have been cool if he'd come back from the streak being broken and then had the match with Sting, and they both called it a career after that. I mean, ideally, I've been asked before, when should Taker have retired? And I liked the Styles match a couple of years ago. That was cool. He should have retired years before that, though. I would have had him wrap it up at Mania 28 with Triple H. The end of an era, that final shot of him, Shawn, and Taker, all three of them, Triple H, exiting the arena together was amazing. That was truly and could have been the end of an era, except all three guys ended up wrestling again anyway, and including against each other 10 years later or whatever it was, which was fucking
crown jewel, baby.
Exactly, 6 years later. So, but yeah, I would have done Taker and Sting 31. Taker wins, shows respect to Sting, and that's it for both of them. And I mean, Sting can wrestle again, but Taker should have been done there, I think. That would have been the perfect send-off for him.
Yeah, I think when you look back at it, if Taker was still undefeated by the time he got to Roman Reigns at 33, if Roman was the only guy to beat Taker and seeing what Roman is doing now, I could be like, you know what? I'm fine, because now you just elevated this guy into a different stratosphere where he's now the longest reigning champion, breaking all these records. Now I get it. But it's weird because Brock at that time, you could say, did not need it, but it did elevate him to a degree where he just became unstoppable, multiple time champion, a year champion. Like, he met WrestleMania main event, event. And it's like, okay, I get it. But, and it's weird, you have Taker lose. I'm thinking, all right, he's done. Why would you make him lose, you know, and then say, all right, I'm going to come back, win against Wyatt, lose against Roman. I put my hat and my boots in the middle of the ring after that match, and he said, you know what? I'm going to come back for 36. So,
well, that was Vince's fault. No, I mean, it is Taker's fault for agreeing to it. I mean, he talked about it in his documentary, but Vince was like, hey, pal, we need one more from you. And you know, if Vince was still in charge, he probably would have called him by now. I have no doubt about that at all. So,
I get it. And listen, man, Taker's loyal, so you can't even fault him for
it's
that.
But loyalty. It's like, whatever's
good for business, you know. You forgot John Cena at 34, the quick 2 minute match. Like,
yeah, that, and even the Shane one too. That one was awful, but the Shane Hell in the Summer.
Yeah. So at the 30 was Shane. I'm sorry, Bray, Shane, Roman, Cena. John Cena. Yeah.
Nothing at 35.
35, he was off.
Yeah.
And then AJ Styles. So, like, even if John Cena was your last match, you know, Taker was still doing decently, you know, being in shape wise.
Yeah.
And that was a nice build up. John Cena calling him out, his wife and everything. Like, okay. But then you do that in 2-3 minutes. Like,
there was so much about those final few years that made no sense, dude. I mean, again, he talks all about it in the documentary where he was like, I was preparing for a real match, and it looked like that was the best shape that Taker had been in years. And then he gets told, yeah, we're doing a 2-minute squash. You couldn't have done the Roman match as a 2-minute squash where Roman beat him in two minutes. That would have been better than what the fuck. I mean, it made no sense. Stupid.
Yeah, I did see Kevin Nash on a podcast recently saying that Bray should have been the guy to beat Taker. But, if there was one guy, it should have been Bray.
I mean, that's understandable. I can understand. I would have not broken it at all, but if you're saying if there was anyone to beat it, yeah, probably Bray. I mean, the Brock one, like you said, I don't want to completely shit on. I mean, the guy is canceled now, but at the time, I mean, he really did benefit and was, you know, and he maintained that aura up until his exit recently. Multi-time champion. Yeah. I mean, you rattled off everything, but Bray, could he have benefited as much? Yeah, but the thing with Bray, though, is I don't know if I don't have the confidence that had they had him beat Taker and Vince is still in charge creatively, that Bray would have gotten to become that much bigger of a star than he did. They honestly, Roman beat Taker and it did not matter a fucking lick. It didn't make a lick of a difference. So I'm not even really sure Bray would have mattered either. But I can agree with that opinion, though. I can see that.
And then Roman the following night said, "This is my yard now." And everybody started booing him. He walked out. I think that's still one of his greatest promos, even though he didn't say much, but
it was great.
He
said, they did nothing.
He said enough.
That should have been the heel turn. They didn't do shit.
Yeah, that's right. I want to circle back to Sting real quick to put a bow on that. Do you got a favorite version of Sting? I know they got Surfer, they got Crow, they got the Joker one in TNA. Like, which is Wolfpack Sting? Like, which is your favorite version of Sting?
I mean, probably Crow Sting. Just because it's the version of Sting that everyone really associates with. I mean, I didn't grow up watching WCW. That was before my time. So I don't really have an association. I don't really have any connection to those, honestly, the WCW days of Sting at all. Aside from playing the NWA, or NWO rather, Revenge video game for N64, which I still have. Game's fucking amazing. Nice. Classic. And he's in that game as Crow Sting. So probably Crow Sting. I did not like Joker Sting at first. I thought it was awful. I've grown to appreciate it a lot more in the years since, especially recently. So probably Joker Sting would be a guilty pleasure. But I think Crow Sting takes the cake, though, as far as being the best and my favorite, personally.
I say Crow Sting. Obviously, that was my wheelhouse era, attitude era, the whole war, and, you know, just seeing him. See, Surfer Sting was before, like, I could understand what was going on. So by the time he's like 88, 89, 90, I'm like 5, 7 years old. So I couldn't really appreciate it as much. But seeing Crow Sting and seeing that development, and then obviously that's when I started watching WCW and the whole NWO stuff. And it's like, okay, you go from dark brown, short hair, got the face paint, and then the whole thing with War Games and Luger didn't trust him. He left, and you see the guy in the rafters and black and white, the trench coat, the baseball bat. It was like, oh, so he's just not going to wrestle for a whole year. He'd just be chilling in the rafters. And it was an attraction. People went to Nitro like, oh, where's Sting at? Like, is he here? Is he chilling? And like, you see him come down. And it's like that whole period, man, is like, again, people are going to say what they say about this era and that era, but just those little things, you're not going to see anybody come down from the rafters like Sting anymore. So just those little things you got to like hold on to. But I would say Crow Sting would be, because I mean, it came from Scott Hall. That whole inspiration came from Razor. Mm-hmm. So if it wasn't for Razor saying, hey, did you see the Crow? You probably don't get a Crow Sting variation. So, but I still feel that Darby Allin should have turned on Sting. I don't know if you feel that way, but it would have been an extra like, oh shit moment, like, because you're tag champions, you're retiring. What am I going to do with this? Do I got to vacate it? Do I got to find a brand new partner? Mm-hmm. You're leaving me hanging, but now you elevate Darby into, like, I win the match, but I can still elevate you by you turning on me because I can't do shit about it. I'm retiring. But like, do you think for Darby's sake, doing all of that stuff, the payoff would have been the elevation of me turning on Sting that night?
No. I don't like the idea. That is such, to me, and I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I'm just saying I don't like it. That's a very WWE thing to do. And I understand your logic behind why he would do that. I get what you just said. I think it would have ruined the moment. It was all about Sting. And I would argue that Darby benefits, one, just by teaming with the guy, and two, just even retiring as champion is Sting. I mean, I understand what you're saying, where he was like, where he could have been like, what do I do with this now? I have nothing to lose. Let me turn on Sting. But that's also forgetting like the last 3 or 4 years of them being friends and teaming and really growing to respect Sting and knowing he's retiring. I mean, maybe if you wanted to go that route, then okay. I saw other people saying the same thing. I'm glad they didn't do that because it was all about Sting. You don't always have to put someone over on the way out. And again, he did with Darby just by teaming with the guy. And they can hopefully, I say maintain the momentum for Darby, but apparently he's having a match with Jay White next Wednesday on the show. After that, though, I'm pretty sure he's leaving to go climb Mount Everest. So I don't even think he's going to be around.
I've heard, yeah.
So, I mean, it wouldn't have mattered anyway. But no, I'm glad they didn't do that. I'm glad it was all about Sting. And for once in wrestling, you can have a feel-good moment without it being ruined by anything else. I feel like that happens all the time, especially in WWE, because it's all about the fucking heat. Like, for one night, I'm glad it wasn't. Anyway, for me personally.
Okay. Well, maybe he could turn on Sting on a Dynamite. You know, the future of the tag title is now in jeopardy. We're going to have Sting come out, Darby come out, and then some boom. Maybe you could do something. Probably not a Revolution, give Sting the moment, respectfully, but all right, down the road. My last point, real quick, so I don't want to spend too much time. I know we speak about these guys every week, but, you know, The Rock acknowledging Roman Reigns. Just real quick, before I get to Paul Heyman in Hall of Fame. So when you see The Rock acknowledging, I noticed that, you know, Roman did say, I need a favor. I need you to do something for me. I need you to acknowledge me. And The Rock said, I acknowledge you, family. I acknowledge you as my tribal chief.
Mm-hmm.
Like the little, to me, the little hesitation. He didn't say my tribal chief. He said my tribal chief. Like he couldn't believe he was saying that. So overall, I know they spent 40 minutes on there. I don't mind. But what did you make of that and the fact that you're now getting The Rock to acknowledge publicly Roman Reigns?
I loved it. I thought it was a great segment. I mean, I know you can make the argument like they got to put more creative effort into other stuff on the show as much as they do this shit. But and that's why it's so good, because they give it so much time and it has so many layers. I feel like some other storylines like Bobby Lashley and Karrion Kross will never have this many layers, but they could definitely, you know, put more effort into it. But I thought it was a great segment. I like the hesitation there from Rock towards Roman. We know they're headed for a match next year. That's inevitable. We already knew that. We've talked about it. But the way they're leaning into it, and again, there were the Easter eggs where the first heel Rock promo a couple weeks ago, and I said, you don't really know for a fact if it was done intentionally, if it was just a coincidence. But this time around, whether the first time or not was an accident, this time around, if you saw it, he did that, and then slowly went back to doing that. That was on purpose when he was throwing up the one, kind of doing the L, maybe for the loser, whatever. I love it. They did a better job this time of not overshadowing Roman Reigns, and they incorporated that in this segment as they hope they would, and they did. That was my problem with the first heel Rock promo. It was all about Rock, which was fine for one night, but you can't overshadow Roman or the title. They did not do that last week. It was actually all about Roman in the end when Rock acknowledged them. So I love it. I hope Rock isn't a double agent and turns on Rock or Roman, because it's been the plan the whole time. I don't really like that idea. It's fine. That's just not really that interesting to me. I'd rather we get heel Rock for a lot longer and Roman goes babyface. That's really what I want to say.
Yeah. And we are going to officially have the tag match in night one, main event, Rock and Roman against Cody and Seth. And, you know, for me, Graham, when you see The Rock do his promo, you're sitting down, you're entertained, you're watching. For me, sometimes when it comes to a Cody or Seth, you can kind of tell the difference of like Rock and everybody else is down here like, it was cool, and Seth with the, you know, calling the Rock names, and it's like, come on, bro, we got to do better than that. It's like just overall, like the Rock is the Rock when it comes to promos. He's probably Mount Rushmore on just being on the microphone in general, but just to even compete with him on the mic, like a Cody or Seth, it's like it feels like you're light years behind the Rock.
Yeah, no, they both are, both Cody and Rollins. I would go, and even Roman's really gotten good with promos. I mean, Rock is great, and I think he showed how good he is with both that promo on SmackDown and the one on Twitter from earlier in the day, the 21-minute promo. That is exactly what we were talking about and exactly what I said I wanted to see out of The Rock. The heel promo was great. A couple weeks ago, it was fun. It was a nice throwback, trip down memory lane, whatever, to like 98, Hollywood Rock, corporate Rock, whatever. A Nation of Domination Rock. This was 2024 Rock, heel Rock, but serious Rock. And I loved it. And he explained stuff. He made sense of certain stuff. He acknowledged Roman literally, figuratively, and incorporated him into a segment, set forth what we want to see at Mania. Again, between the two promos on, I mean, it wasn't entirely him talking to Open SmackDown, but between the 40 minutes that Open SmackDown and then his promo on Twitter, he literally spent an hour that Friday doing promos and shit. And it was great. The thing is, you don't do that if it's not good. I would sit here and complain if it wasn't good. Typically, you can't do that every week. They did that at MSG last year, and it was great. This was the same thing, and I thought it was great. Made the most of it. Heel Rock right now is killing it, and that is exactly why, going back to what I just said, I want to see more of Heel Rock coming out of WrestleMania 40 and not have it short-lived up until that point.
And then Seth and Cody went out there for 25 minutes on Raw.
That was fine, too. It was funny. They were like, oh, you talk for 20 minutes on Twitter, and then they talk for 25 minutes. And the Rock promo was better. The Cody Rollins stuff was fine. The Diarrhea Dwayne stuff was fucking awful, dude. I mean, I don't know if that was intentional. I can't say for a fact, but terrible. That was like Vince McMahon was still writing this shit. Like, what was that bullshit? Maybe the joke is like, oh, Rock comes up with these bad catchphrases and nicknames. Let's give him one. I mean, I guess, but it don't call attention to it because it was awful. But beyond that, it was a really good segment, though.
Exactly. My last point, obviously, every WrestleMania weekend, they do the Hall of Fame. Well, we got two names out there ready. Bull Nakano is going to go in. But I think the headliner, because it is Philadelphia, is going to be Paul Heyman. You could say long overdue. I mean, he's still active, so it's kind of hard to put someone active in the Hall of Fame. But if you go down that guy's resume, it's like it's a fucking page after page after page. And, you know, Philadelphia, Paul Heyman, what he means to the company, what he means to pro wrestling, you know, the whole ECW revolution and just changing the landscape of professional wrestling for what it is today. What's your overall take of Paul Heyman going into the Hall of Fame? Should he be the headliner? And like the impact that he's had on pro wrestling?
Love it. Yes, he should be the headliner and a massive impact. I think it was expected that he'd be inducted just because we're in Philly this year for WrestleMania weekend. So it makes all the sense in the world. I just didn't think it would actually happen because I honestly thought he would say no. He's very old school. He's never out of character. And I figured he would be one of those guys. Not that he would never go in, but I thought he would wait until he was done. And then the guy's already like 60-something, which is amazing. It's Paul Heyman. I mean, he's looked the same way for 20, 25 years, so it's kind of hard to tell. But I don't know. Maybe, obviously, I think the Philly thing had a lot to do with it. If this was any other year and they asked him, he might have said no. But I feel like the Philly thing means a lot to him. Hopefully he is out of character for the induction speech. I would hope so. I know it's Mania weekend. Roman's got his big match on both nights. He can break character for one night. People wouldn't care. He's obviously worthy. I would say he's the headliner. I don't know who else they would have in. I know they announced Bull Nakano the other day. That was cool. I thought she might have already been in, but obviously not. I know people are saying Bray, and that's great, and Bray should be in, and I agree. They typically... I didn't watch the Hall of Fame in 06, so maybe Eddie... I don't think Eddie even went on last that year. My point is, they don't typically have posthumous inductees, people that have passed, go on last. It's even Macho Man. They had Macho Man go on second to last in 2015, and then it was Kevin Nash. Every year when they have people that have passed that go in, they are never the headliner because it's like depressing or they're not there or whatever, which I understand. So Bray should, and if he's not, you know, they can wait another year. It's no rush. But I don't think he would be the headliner. They typically announce the headliner first. I think they did that here for a reason. And I think he will headline. But yeah, the impact that he's had, I mean, as a manager alone, he would go into the Hall of Fame for the stuff he's done dating back to ECW, but in WCW as well, the Dangerous Alliance. But in WWE with Brock, Punk, Lesnar, Roman alone in the last you know, 20 years has been incredible, but literally founding and being a big part of ECW 20, 30 years ago now, and kind of revolutionizing what we would later see in the Attitude Era in the late 90s. I mean, without ECW, I don't know what the Attitude Era, if anything, what it would look like at that point if it wasn't for ECW. And some of the talent that came out of the promotion, Rob Van Dam, the Dudleys, one of the greatest teams of all time, Sabu, among many other people. Jericho had spent some time there among, you know, Benoit, people like that. So, I mean, just an incredible, influential figure in the business. No doubt at all that he's Hall of Fame worthy, and I'm glad he's getting the nod this year.
Hey, listen, man, congrats to Paul, major influence. I might do a longer video tomorrow, like I did last week, post SmackDown. It was really good. I felt like, you know me, I don't cover SmackDown, Raw, match by match. It was like, I only did it because The Rock did the promo for 40 minutes, and I felt like, let me get something off my chest, but I might go more in depth with Heyman. But I think just on the surface, you know, just, again, you just had to be there. Like, that was my time. So when you're watching the New Generation era, the era of the Shawns, the Brett, Razor, Diesel, Taker kind of era, and you get the WCW of, like, now they're bringing in Hogan and the Machos, mm-hmm. and you got Flair, Sting, Luger, and those guys. Like, are you seeing us back and forth? Then you get this little ECW, and it's like, yo, who are these people? And I'm watching, Graham, that shit came on at 2:00 in the morning on the fucking MSG network. Mm-hmm. And I'm just scrolling, I think on a Friday or Saturday night, if I'm not mistaken. And I hear the music. Dun, 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 dun. I'm like, great, what is this? And it's like, all right, call this number for the hotline. And like, okay. Then I see guys like Taz and Rob Van Dam and Sabu, the Franchise, Shane Douglas, Raven, Mick Foley, Jerry, all these guys came from there. Mm-hmm. Steve Austin was in there before he became Stone Cold. Mm-hmm. Jericho, Eddie Guerrero, Rey Mysterio. It was like, and then you see them sprinkling in. You know, I'm watching Mind Games in Your House in Philadelphia. It's Shawn and Mankind in the main event. You see ECW people in the front row, Sandman, all these people. Like, okay. And then they start incorporating them into the matches. Mm-hmm. Jerry Lawler, and say, who are these guys in Philadelphia? Paul Heyman calls into Livewire under Bruce, knowing he's Paul Heyman, to talk to Vince McMahon. And it's like just those little things that revolutionized where, the attitude, the chairs, the table, the barbed wire, the extreme matches. You got extreme rules as a fucking pay-per-view now because of ECW. Mm-hmm. And just the managerial roles, Punk and Brock and Roman, Cesaro, we go all down the line. But I think before I let you go, who should be the guy or guys to induct Paul Heyman? You said Brock is probably not going to do it. Nope. Roman may not break character. Punk ain't doing anything, so I'm thinking he's head of the pack. Mm-hmm. But it could be a Tommy Dreamer. It could be Bubba Ray Dudley. It could be someone of that elk.
Yeah.
To induct him. Maybe Steve Austin, because he gave him his opportunity to get shit off his chest and make fun of Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff and all that. Mm-hmm. Who should induct Paul Heyman to the Hall of Fame?
I mean, anyone you just mentioned, honestly, anyone that was close with him during his ECW days, Stone Cold, Bubba, Tommy, Brock's not happening. I honestly expect Roman, just that they wanted to keep kayfabe and he's with him right now and they'll be with each other that weekend. I don't like that. I mean, it's not someone like completely that Paul doesn't know, but I mean, there's way True. Better options. And I mean, if Roman were to do it, it would have to be out of character. Punk, honestly, to me, would be the best option. Cause he's not around right now. He's not doing anything. I mean, he's around, but he's not around. He's injured. He can do it. It would get Punk involved with WrestleMania weekend. They're very close, or they were at one point. He was instrumental in Punk's career and vice versa. So, I would have Punk do it, but if it was someone from ECW, like a Dreamer or a Bubba or a few people from ECW, that wouldn't be a bad idea either. So I'm curious to see who he goes with, or someone completely out of left field that we have. Like I remember when the Warrior got inducted, he chose Linda. So fucking random, but it was because he was close with Linda when he worked for the company. So he chose Linda. I'm like, okay, yeah, whatever you want. So at the end of the day, if it is their choice, then he might be picking someone that we don't even know. So I guess we'll find out. But I mean, Punk would be a pretty great choice, though, I would say.
Yeah, I forgot Warrior picked Lindell. Like, hey, Warrior, man, you couldn't. Obviously, it could have been Hogan.
There's no one else really that he likes. That's the problem.
You know, Honky Tonk Man, like, I don't know who Warrior would have picked, but I think Punk is option A, and it's got to be someone that you got to let them talk. Fuck the kayfabe shit. Talk about your experience working with Paul, the influence he's had on you. So it could be Punk, Austin. Maybe they want like a headliner for that too. You know, like if you pick a Tommy Dreamer or Bubba Ray, is it like, oh shit, like am I gonna hear all these stories? But if Punk or Stone Cold is the guy, like, oh shit, I'm gonna hear at least 20 minutes of that. And Paul got to talk for like a half hour. You can't.
No,
you got to give him the Undertaker thing, mm-hmm, where he just let him be, talk after SmackDown in the middle of the ring, because that's what they do, mm-hmm, now for the Hall of Fame, and just talk your shit. Mm-hmm. My last point is this. Aside from Heyman, okay, he's number one. Aside from Heyman, who do you think is on the Mount Rushmore for ECW? You can't count Paul Heyman.
I was going to say talent-wise we're talking here.
We're talking wrestling-wise.
Yeah, yeah. I would probably say, again, not having grown up in ECW, guys, I'm kind of going off my memory here. I'm thinking Rob Van Dam, Taz, Sabu, Sandman. I feel like, I mean, you could put the Dudleys, but they weren't, one, the team they weren't now, and two, and that's two people. So I would probably go Sandman, RVD, Sabu, and Taz. You could say Terry Funk, too. Terry Funk was a big part of their history early on. Terry Funk is another big one. You can replace Sandman with him. Dreamer would probably replace Sandman.
You got Tommy Dreamer. Yeah. You got, listen, the franchise was...
Yeah. Yeah, definitely Douglas.
Yo, he was so annoying, bro.
How long was he? I know early on, but like, how long was his run overall?
He was there for a hot minute, because obviously he was Dean Douglas.
Yeah, in WWE.
Before, and he comes here, and I was like, oh.
Well, he was in ECW, and then he went to WWE, and then he went back to ECW, right? Or was he in WCW before that? I don't remember.
I think it was WCW, WWF, ECW. Okay. I could be wrong.
Maybe he wasn't.
But no matter what, first, yeah, ECW was like, you're the guy. Mm-hmm. You're the champion, the franchise. Like, this the same guy that was Dean Douglas against Shawn Michaels last year. Like,
yeah.
But like, Rod Van Dam for sure. Sabu could be for sure. I think the heart and soul, they're probably going to put Tommy Dreamer in there. Like, you could put Raven. Is so many acts you can put on there. Mick Foley was there for a little while. But I think for those who just never heard of ECW, go check it out, or haven't seen it in a while. Trust me, the matches are crazy. If you think that AEW shit they're doing now is like, oh, crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Go fucking check out ECW, because they did a lot worse over there. So, and it was more acceptable back then, and it revolutionized the sport. But I mean, either way, congrats to Paul Heyman. We'll see who is going to induct him to the Hall of Fame. And there are some people who out there that I think deserve the nod. And I'm like, you know, obviously I'm going to say like Demolition should be in there, the Steiners, Owen Hart should be in there. You know, Lex Luger should be in there.
You'll probably go in this year, is my guess.
You know, they're trying to see who they probably pick five people, maybe.
I hope they go with five. I mean, to do any more than that is excessive, because you could just wait another year, and you can't always wait, but like, the more people you do, the longer or the shorter the speeches are going to be. And these people deserve them their moment to talk for a while, so, and not be rushed. So, you know, I don't want to go like, oh, one woman and then like one head. Like, I don't really like that sort of stuff, but you know, you usually get one tag team, typically one female, but you can have two, obviously. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they do a Warrior Award now. I'm not really sure, but you know, Bray, Lex.
Yeah, Bray would get in. I think Bray would get in.
Yeah, so let's say Bray, Luger, Demolition, Bull Nakano, and Heyman.
Heyman.
Yeah. That's what I would do. Batista's not going to that. Not this year. I don't know what his deal is.